Hello and welcome to the 48 Minutes of Heaven. We call the D1 Baseball Podcast, Videocast, Live Stream. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney, coming to you from the fighting city of Prescott, Arizona, by way of suburban Philadelphia. We are joined by Aaron Fitt, who is calling from Gotham. We can't give you exact coordinates because he's on a top secret mission. We've got Kendall Rogers from Houston, Texas. And gentlemen, we're continuing our coach conversations, and we have an awesome guest today. We've got Eske. We've got David Esker from Stanford University. Eske, welcome aboard.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks, guys.
Eske, you get the best hair on this call.
It's really strong.
Not even close.
Last year.
No offense, Fitzy, but the silver tips, I mean, come on, that's legit.
Oh, it's dynamite.
Eske, it's good to have you on here. I will say this, though. We now have two guys on this video cast that finished number one in their high school class. Aaron finished number one as well, Eske.
All right. I like it. Join the club.
There we go. Nerdcast, we'll call this.
You're right.
Was it Palma High School number one in your class, right, Eske?
Yeah, Palma High School in Salinas.
There you go.
Is Salinas where Xavier Nady was from too?
Yeah, Xavier Nady is from Salinas. I tell X, I say he's the second best player ever to come out of Salinas.
That's great. What and the Palma High? What Pumas? It's got to be another
Chieftains.
P, right?
The Chieftains. Yeah, it was. It's changed to like the Irish type chieftain nowadays. So,
what? There you go.
Yeah.
Colors. What was it? How were our unis? How was our uni game?
It was red and gold. Red and gold. In high school, we had our Palma with the P, we had the old Phillies pinstripes. Our uniform.
Oh, I love it. That is great. All right. So, gentlemen, and Eske, let me verbally explain our kind of round the horn format here. So the way we'll do it is, and I'll start, we will, you know, fire questions at you kind of as a normal interview would go, myself, and then we'll go Kendall, then we'll go Fitzy. And then you, each round, Eske, you get to return the favor. So after we've asked our first question, you can pick one of us and ask us a question, and then we'll probably do that for three turns, and then we'll be good. So how's that sound? Okay. You ready?
Sounds good.
All right, good. All right, so Eske, I am going, as I got myself ready for this interview, I ended up on the wiki page for the 1987 NCAA baseball tournament, where the Stanford Cardinal won it all, and you were all CWS shortstop, and so it was Coach Marquis's first national championship. But here's what I wanted to ask you about, Eske. Some of the people that were in that College World Series was amazing. So let me read to you some of the coaches in that CWS. Jim Brock, Arizona State; Norm DeBrien, Arkansas; Mike Martin, Florida State; Steve Weber, Georgia; Skip Burtman, LSU; Gary Ward, Oklahoma State; Mark Marquess, Stanford; Cliff Gustafson, Texas. I mean, it was like a Hall of Fame tournament, Eske. And before I get you to comment, let me give you some of the players. So just from the all-CWS team, Brad Beamblossom from Oklahoma State. He was a personal fave. Scott Coolball of Texas. Mark Maktoff was the all-CWS, all College World Series designated hitter. Paul Carey, of course. And then some of the famous players, so Mike Benjamin, Blas Minor of Arizona State, Chris Carpenter, and Derek Lowquist of Georgia. How about LSU? Albert Bell, Mark Guthrie, Ben McDonald, Russ Springer, Robin Ventura was in that CWS. One of your teammates, Ruben Amaro, Jack McDowell, Ed Sprague. I mean, Eske, this is like the Emmys for college baseball or something.
Yeah, it was a big time tournament, and some of the players. Now, was Deion Sanders that year? Because he was there.
Yes, Deion was there too.
Deion was there in with Florida State. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Did Deion stand out, Eske, or I don't? Did you guys play Florida State?
You know what? We knew of Deion. I was surprised how big he was on the baseball field. You know, he was bigger than you thought, and we all had heard of him as being a football baseball guy. Richie Lewis was another.
Oh gosh! War number four with that big hammer.
Oh yeah, little guy who had a good quick arm, and he was a competitor. He was Jack McDowell like on the mound for Florida State. And what I mean, I'm saying that he was not afraid to mix it up with the opponent.
Oh my gosh, Eski, before I turn it over to Kendall, do you have one like just memory from that College World Series that's seared into your mind, something that you'll never forget?
Oh shoot, obviously the Grand Slam by Paul Carey was a big moment. You know, I remember coming back out for the semifinal game and Texas scored three runs in the top of the first inning. We got one out in the top of the first, and it was 3-0. And I remember Coach Marcos coming out to the mound. We're going to change pitchers. We're bringing our left-hander, Al Osuna, who eventually went 8 2/3 of shutout baseball the rest of the way. But I remember just Coach Marcos being on the mound, and we're all, you know, at that point, the coaches used to stand on the mound waiting for the guy to get through his warm-up tosses. And I remember there, and he looked a little tense, and I remember saying to him, just to break the ice, I said, God, Nine, you know, Lee just didn't have his good stuff today. And he was a little tense, and all of a sudden he turns to me and goes, yeah, and he was just up with everything in the zone. And I remember turning to him before he left the mound, and I said, hey, Nine, they're going to need more than three to beat us today. And I remember looking at me and kind of smiling. And now being a head coach, if I had a player say that to me to kind of loosen me up and relax me down, I would have really appreciated that. And I said, it struck me that I can't believe I was the guy to do that for him on the mound, just to have that light moment to say, hey, don't worry, Nine, we're going to be okay today.
Oh, I love it. KR, you're next.
Yeah, Eski, I kind of go back to, you know, the 2020 season that got cut short. You and I saw your team in Round Rock early on. It wasn't the prettiest performances ever. I guess just looking back at that spring, that season getting cut short, you guys just not playing well, Alex Williams getting hurt. You go in the fall, and obviously the fall, you guys weren't able to really have a fall because of COVID. And then you come back in January. I mean, what was your feeling on that team as you go from just an ugly start in 20 to not really having any time with your kids in the fall to all of a sudden in January, we've got to get ready for the season. And, oh, by the way, the season's going to end with a trip to the College World Series.
Well, I remember that year. So, first of all, that wasn't – it really wasn't unexpected by myself and our staff. You know, when I took over the job, recruiting had kind of stopped for Stanford. You know, Coach had announced his retirement a year ahead of time. And so recruiting was kind of stalemated when we got here. I think they had four commits, and we had to try to pick up that class. And we made a conscious effort. And I learned this, obviously, during my years at Cal when they cut the program and we had to restart recruiting all of a sudden in June again. And I made some mistakes there, and I learned to not make those same mistakes. And we said, hey, we're not gonna go out and recruit and give out scholarship money that we don't necessarily want to give out. We're gonna hold it back, and we're gonna get the players that we really want and with the scholarship that we have. So recruiting took a pause, and I knew that there was going to be a year there that there was going to be a little bit of a gap. And the gap wasn't that we weren't going to have a freshman class. It was probably that we weren't going to have a sophomore class when it was their time to turn the program over to them. So we knew that. During that tournament, I remember we played Tennessee, who was really good and just as good as they were the next year when they were in Omaha. And we started seven freshmen. And I knew we just weren't going to be, you know, ready to win those type of games right away. I thought we would have got better as the year went on. I thought we'd have been much improved by the end of the season. But at the start of the season, we weren't going to be prepared to win. Now, fast forward a year later, I know the difference that 365 days can make. And, you know, and I knew that we were going to be much improved. I knew we had the players that were going to get us there. It was just about us getting them ready. And so I think one of the publications and had us picked ninth in the league preseason. And I kind of half jokingly was saying to my staff, I said, well, I guess that'll make me coach of the year because we're not finishing.
That was me.
I said, we're not going to finish ninth. And I just knew we weren't going to finish ninth because, you know, and I think a couple years earlier, I think we had six or seven juniors who signed, you know, the Dashbox, Stowers, Jack Little year, all those guys. Not one of them was an impact freshman. You know, not one of them. They were all capable of being drafted and signed as juniors. They weren't impact freshmen. And I knew we had the same type of player that by their sophomore year, they were going to be ready to help us win. And that's what they were, you know, the Brock Joneses of the world and all those freshmen who kind of wore it as freshmen were going to be ready to help us win.
Fitzy, you're up.
I want to ask you, I want to go back in time a little bit here, not as far as runes went, because I was five in 1987 or whatever. But, you know, 2011 was 11, right? The magical season for Cal. I mean, you know, I can't even script a better story than that. You know, the program going to get cut. We think this is going to be the last season for Cal baseball. You know, the alumni and the supporters of the program rallying to save the program during the season. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to manage that whole fiasco while also trying to coach this team that, by the way, had a whole lot of talent on it. But, you know, you're on the road in a regional. And I remember I covered the super regional that you had to play at Santa Clara because you couldn't host on campus. And, you know, here we are. It's Dallas Baptist and Cal. You know, 2-3 seeds in a super, and you got to go to Santa Clara to play. I mean, and you win that thing, you get to Omaha. Can you just kind of take us through that whole experience? I mean, I can only imagine what that was like for you as a coach and looking back on it a decade later.
Well, there was no manual on how to handle your program being cut and then still try to, you know, coach a team. And prior to that, the season getting started, I knew we had an Omaha type team. And the reason I say that, as I told our team, I said, we can beat anybody in the country 2 out of 3. We had the personnel to win 2 out of 3 versus anybody. And I said, and hey, here's the beauty. If we can get to a super regional, it's 2 out of 3 to get to Omaha. Well, then all of a sudden the wrench comes in and they cut the program. And God, I remember there was a picture in the San Francisco Chronicle of Andrew Knapp, who catches with the Philadelphia Phillies. It was his freshman year. His dad played at Cal. His mom went to Cal. His dream was to play at Cal. And literally 3 weeks from the time he started school, they cut the baseball program. And there was a picture in the San Francisco Chronicle of him sitting in the stands, head down in tears. And I kind of described that season that it was a constant of three different things. It was running a program, dismantling a program, and saving a program all at the same time. And it was all day, every day. And, you know, in the fall, there was a weekend that we were inter-squatting, and Tony Renda and Justin Jones, who were two of our best players, were on a recruiting trip at the University of Oregon. And I remember my assistant coach saying, hey, Tony and Justin won't be here this weekend for inter-squads. They're going on a recruiting visit. And I said, hey, I know that's going to happen, but don't tell me. I said, that's just like setting my wife up on dates. I don't need to know that. So it was an interesting experience, obviously, to go through the team. You know, I think we had 3 players at the break who decided not to come back. And all of them could have not come back, and they could have played in January. You know, so my starting, you know, Tony Renda could have transferred to any team in the country, and he would have been playing in February to start the season. They were given that waiver to be able to do that. And 3 of them decided not to come back. And I know some people said, hey, coach, what do you think about the 3 players that didn't come back? And I really couldn't blame them, right? It was just uncertain, unsure. You didn't know what was going to happen. And I said, I'm not going to worry about the 3 that decided not to come back. I said, how about the 35 players that decided to come back and play with this team, knowing that we had a chance to be pretty good, and they were going to give the university the best team possible if it was going to be the last year ever. And so all year long, it was kind of marked with those type of moments. And whether it was, you know, the regional at Rice, where we score 4 runs in the bottom of the 9th inning to beat Baylor, you know, just a miracle inning. And then obviously, you know, one of the other obstacles we had at Cal at that point, we didn't have lights. We weren't able to host a regional. So not only were we just battling with, you know, other challenges, we couldn't even host a super regional when we got the opportunity. So we go play it at Santa Clara. And that really was just a thank you to all the people who had saved the program. And I think our guys really felt that, you know, names such as Stu Gordon and just alumni who just stepped up to kind of save the program. And it really was just our personal physical thank you to all those alumni who brought the program back, and was to celebrate there at Santa Clara and get Cal Berkeley back to the College World Series.
And I want to follow up with this because Tony Renda is one of my all-time favorite college baseball players. Just a great Cal Bear. I think I once called him in an interview. interview. He just after he went on visit and what was happening to the program, and he said, "Yeah, I went up to not Berkeley, you know." It's just like, you know, just the passion that those kids had. The passion that those kids had, you know, for Cal baseball and for, you know, the whole education, the whole experience that they got. I mean, and I guess you get a lot of that at Stanford too, just the well-rounded kids that really value the entire experience beyond baseball.
Yeah, and hey, and you see that, and the kids are passionate about the school, and you know, Tony Renda to this day is one of the players I'm closest to off the field. He's like a son to me, and just yeah, he's a great Cal Bear, and somebody who'll go down in history. And him scoring on that base hit with two outs in the ninth inning, he blows out his quad right the step before he hits third base, and so he's dragging his right leg all the way home and diving head first in order to get there. One quick story about that final game was Alan Craig, who was another former Cal Bear, who was playing with the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cardinals were playing the Astros that game. And he calls me up and he says, "Hey, coach, I want to bring some guys over to the final. I see you guys are playing the final." I said, "Yeah." So he comes over. And he brings like Yadier Molina. He might have even brought Pujols, but he brought like five or six Cardinal players. And we're down 7-1 in the sixth inning.
Oh, no.
And Alan's like, "Hey, I'm not bringing them much luck." And so they leave the game right in the sixth inning. And so the next day he says, he calls me up and he says, "Hey, some of the players said, hey, how about that ending? You guys," and he couldn't believe that we won. He goes, "I left the game and it was 7-1 and you guys come back and win." He couldn't believe it, but he, you know,
so great.
He just expressed how happy he was for us. But yeah, there was a bunch of big time Cardinals sitting in the stands watching us go down 7-1.
Awesome. Oh, Esky, you're up. You get to ask the question now.
Yeah, I want to know. So, Runes, and give me last year your number one memory of that season, not just us, but any in college baseball.
Oh, boy, that is interesting. I would say top memory.
How about the resurgence of the Fighting Irish with the...
Oh, that was incredible. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I will tell you this, Esky, that, like, you know, we're all wired. That getting to Omaha is so hard. And so even though, you know, like, when you go as a broadcaster, you know, like Kendall and Aaron and I are, you kind of know you're going every year, most years. But still, in my soul, I can't get my brain to think that way. Like, you still, every time I look at the airline ticket that says Omaha, like, it still gives you chills. But I would tell you that after losing the 20 season, this year in Omaha was so special, you know, just seeing everybody. But I would also, you know, to caveat that answer, I tell you, I thought the regional round this year was just unbelievable. And I'm thinking about like the Tennessee Wright State game. And, yeah, you know, like that was like a heavyweight fight. It was like Frazier and Ali just like trading punches, and whoever got to throw the last punch was going to win. And that was a 1-4 game, right? Like, yeah, that wasn't right, even, right. Yeah, it was. I
know about that Wright State team because I think they took us 14 innings in game one of our regional a couple years ago, and you know, just a heck of a team, and nobody mm-hmm. wants to see that four.
No,
because Wright State is they are no four for sure.
No question. So, hey, Esky, so we'll start round two with, I got a question for you. One of my all-time favorite Stanford Cardinal is Brendan Beck. Love Brendan Beck. And, you know, I just think you guys getting Omaha this year, there was just, you know, there's so many layers to it, right? Stanford hadn't been to Omaha since 2008. It was your seventh consecutive road super regional. I mean, just think about how crazy it is. Stanford had played seven straight supers on the road, and we know how hard that is. And on top of it all, you guys have to go to Lubbock, who and Tim Tadlock and the Red Raiders are 4-0 in home supers, and it's a day game. It's going to be a trillion degrees, but Brendan Beck comes to you and says, "I want to wear the black jerseys." Yeah. And to me, you guys won the Super Regional when he said that. And so anyway, and Brendan Beck did not have the best Omaha, even though it's easy to forget, before the end of your game with Vanderbilt, he was carving. I mean, he was dealing and then just looked like he kind of ran out a little bit of gas. But, you know, I just would love to get your thoughts on Brendan Beck and that super regional and what he meant to your program.
Oh, he was, you know, he came back and could have had opportunity to sign even as a free agent with that 5-round draft and was not going to do it. And he came back with one sole purpose, was to get Stanford back to Omaha. And when you got guys who, you know, that have that purpose behind what they're doing the whole season, and that kind of drove him, and you know, and he just brought guys along with him, whether it was Brock Jones or, you know, the Drew Bowsers, the whole program was Brendan Beck came back to go to Omaha, and that was it, and so he kind of led us in that way, but he's just a fierce competitor and kind of fearless and really intentional that he was going to wear black jerseys in 105 degree weather. And he felt like, you know, hey, we got to show them that we're coming here to play and we're not going to get back down to the heat. And so have nothing but respect for Coach Tadlock's team too, boy. You know, they were kind of the benchmark for me a year ago. And I felt like, you know, if we were going to find out what it was going to take to win in Omaha, not just get there and get and participate, but win, you know, I kind of said, hey, teams like Texas Tech are the teams we're going to have to be able to beat. And so when we matched up with them on the road, I said, boy, this is no lose for us, because if we're able to win, I felt like we would prove that we're able to win in Omaha, not just be there. And if we didn't win, I felt like we were going to know exactly what we're going to have to do to get there and win in the future. So I almost felt like this is a no lose series for us. Let's go out and just lay it on the line. Let's go out there and just, you know, and play them head on, and let's see what happens. It's going to mean everything to our program. And our guys just came out with just an unbelievable, courageous performance. And it was an experience I'll never forget.
Was it one of those weekends where, like, as a coach, you saw just the way your team was reacting to whether it's preparation or when you showed up to the ballpark, to where you felt like, you know what, like, I have a really good feeling about this. Like, I actually feel like we're gonna beat up on these guys a little bit.
Well, we just had a couple moments, and I'll be honest, one of the things I always have to stress with our guys is to be able to play loose, right, and be able to play free, and you know, the Stanford kid, you know, they're used to thinking about things, and I just try to get them to play just carefree, and I remind them about that all the time. And the practice day before, when we were practicing, it just had a different feel. Like, you know, they had felt like they had belonged. We just a heck of a regional, and I really feel like the respect that they had for Irvine was that it can't be any tougher than they were. They were as tough a, gritty a group, and we knew we were going to play a really tough, gritty group at their home park. And I just kind of felt like our guys felt like they were ready for it. The Pac-12 had prepared them for it. The regional prepared them for it. And you know what? Guys like Brendan Beck and Brock Jones and those guys that came to Stanford to play in those type of games in those moments to get us to Omaha, it was right in front of them. And I don't think they were going to let that slip away from them.
Love it. Fitzy, yeah, are you frozen, or is Fitzy frozen?
I think I might be next. I do have a really – I have a good, really good question for Esky here.
Go for it.
So, Esky, we're going to go back to 1995. We're going to talk about the National Freshman of the Year, Kyle Peterson. Now, you're a hitting guru. So I'll tell you what, you're a hitting coach. You're instructing a hitter to go to the plate against Kyle Peterson in 1995. What's your hitter's approach? What are you looking for? And give us one really good Kyle Peterson story, whether it's on the recruiting trail, when he's at Creighton Prep, or when he's just a silly freshman.
Well, hey, first of all, you got to be ready for that changeup. Like, his number one pitch beyond his years was his changeup. And it was just kind of that magic ball. No one could hit it, right? It was his go-to pitch. It was his out pitch. He had a good fastball and had to kind of develop that fastball from his senior year in high school to his freshman year in college. But the pitch that made him special and beyond his years, and he was just an unbelievable freshman for us, was that changeup. And I remember the one story that we had was we're in the regional at Wichita State, and we're playing Texas Tech. And Kyle was, at that time, he was going to pitch the Friday and then come back on the if necessary game because we're playing Monday. And I think the story as he tells it is they score a run or two in the first inning and he kind of feels like he doesn't have it and is going to give us the best chance to win. And was going to tell Coach Stotts that, hey, maybe he should get someone else going because he didn't really feel like he had it. Well, Coach Stotts, you know, had to go to the restroom and wasn't in the dugout when he immediately came off the field in the first inning. And I guess from the time that when he got back to the dugout and when he was about to go face to face with Coach Stotts, he said he's walking and he's telling himself, I'm not going to ask out of the biggest game of the year. This is the biggest game of the year. And I got to find a way to stay in there and hang in there. So from the time he was going to say, hey, maybe you should get someone loose to the time he met face to face, he walks up to him and he goes, who's leading off next inning? And he goes to get us to Omaha.
Nice.
As, you know, and just an unbelievable career. And I do remember half jokingly when I was an assistant coach, if we would sweep on the road, I'd get on the bus microphone and I would hold what I would call the David Esker show. And I would just kind of jab guys and interview them. And who was my co-host as a freshman who would jump up front with me? Kyle Peterson.
Oh, no way. That's shocking. Awesome.
Back and forth, and we would talk about the weekend, and then we'd bring up guys to the front of the bus, and, you know, we're on the mic on the bus just having a good time. But I know that when we would sweep weekends, guys would always ask for the Dave Esker show with his sidekick, Peterson.
That's great.
That's awesome.
All right, Fitzy, you're up.
Yeah, and I apologize for my bad connection. I hope you guys can hear me.
We got you.
You know, you kind of touched on the David Esker show and just also the way you focus on keeping your guys loose. I remember you talked about this a little bit. I think the back, you know, that you get to, you know, Coach Mark. I mean, he's even keeled, and you seem, and I wonder, you know, what you learned and kind of took into your own coaching style from him, and how do you kind of contrast and compare yourselves?
Yeah, you know what, God, Coach Marcus, he meant everything to me, you know, to this day. I call him often and we speak a lot, and he was like a dad to me. And, you know, he hates when I say that he's like a dad to me. He always says, like, hey, how about an older brother? Right? but you know, we talk all the time, and you know, he fit my style perfectly as a player. You know, at that time, I responded well to those type of coaches that were just energetic and kind of demanded perfection. And, you know, but as an assistant coach, I think I kind of found my sweet spot in his style, which was probably my strength was connecting with the players, right? And kind of buying that trust and to go out there every day. You know, obviously, you know, I wasn't a major league player. I wasn't someone who was an All-American. I was just a hardworking player who kind of hustled and showed up every day. And I felt like that was the connection I had with my players is, you know, and I always told them, I said, I may not have the answer on day one, but if you show up every day, I'm going to find the answer. I'm going to figure it out. You know, we're going to work through it. And so just kind of buying that trust and connecting with the players and finding a little bit, you know, nowadays with the type of players that you deal with, you know, just training them hard, but allowing them to play loose seemed to be something that would seem to be really important, you know, where I just didn't feel guys played well when they played tight. I just try to make sure that they understand that the training has to be hard and we got to find a way to get you to train on your edge physically and technically. And then when the game time comes, let's try to get you to play free, right? That's going to be one of the biggest barriers to players finding their potential. Maybe because it was one of the biggest barriers I had was that freedom. And so, you know, I try to make sure that at least I start there when we try to get players to perform.
Love it. Eske, did you ever consider having players call you by your number like Coach Marquis did 9? Or
you know, they do. I think they put their own slant. I have a lot of guys who call me Ocho, you know, and
I like that better.
That's great.
They kind of put the Dave Esker slant into it, you know, and so I think Coach Andy Lopez would appreciate that the fact that
absolutely would.
In that respect.
Love it. All right, Esky, you're up.
Yeah, let me see. Hey, Aaron, give me your number one pitching performance that you witnessed last year.
Ooh. Fitzy saw a lot of baseball, too.
These are tough questions. We're getting old. We don't remember these things as well.
That is a gem right there. Boy.
Or give me your favorite stadium to go watch college baseball.
Ooh, that's really tough. I think the first question is easier than the second question.
I don't want to paint you in a corner and make some people mad at you, but...
You know, I think Yeah, he was. So, I mean, I thought Bednar was really, really good. You know, both times in Omaha, but you know, to get to just command the top of the zone the way he did, you know, with those stakes, to do it twice. You know, hey, that to me, the I think I wrote in one of those games, he's staring into the catcher after the hitter calls time, and he didn't budge. And I think I said, and he's auditioning for a role on the College World Series statue because, like, he was so intense, he was so locked in, and he didn't move a muscle. But anyone out there that deserves to be on the statue, I mean, really, really special.
Yeah, when you watched him pitch, I'm just imagine the spin rate on that fastball that he must have had on there, right? I mean, that was
exploded.
Pretty special to watch him pitch in that World Series. But how about the Mississippi State icon of all icons, Big E, the bus driver?
The best.
Him?
Yeah. He walks around like he's the athletic director. Like I think Big E believes that John Cohen reports to him. And he may.
I would not be surprised. Big E, he's so
the best
to me, my team, my family, when we went to Mississippi State. You know what? I know my family has a lot of love for Big E and respect what he does.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, so round three, Esky. I'm gonna kind of spin it forward to 2022. So you guys have a really interesting position player group coming back. I mean, obviously Brock Jones, just like the leap he took from 20 to 21 was incredible, and his physical gifts are outrageous. I mean, it's first round physical ability. Tell us about what you hope for your 2022 arms. It seems to me, at first blush, that's going to be the key to your guys' season is the development of, obviously Brendan Beck leaving is over 100 really critical innings. So what are some of your thoughts as you look at your pitching staff for 2022?
Yeah, obviously with Alex Williams coming back is just huge for us, right? Just someone in the mold of a Brendan Beck, a guy with just extreme pitch ability that just kind of keeps getting stronger, and his fastball just keeps bumping up each year. Obviously looking forward to having him back. Obviously looking for a big development out of Quinn Matthews, who went out to Cape Cod this summer, and I think he's pitched well in some of the biggest ball games of the year. He pitched well in the last game versus Irvine for us. He pitched well in the College World Series against Vanderbilt. I think he pitched a big playoff game in Cape Cod. So we're hoping that trajectory of pitching big games and kind of owning his stuff. But it's going to be the fastball command with him. He doesn't get hit much. He just sometimes creates innings, for the opponent when he doesn't need to. His development will be big. But it's that freshman class of pitching that's going to be it's going to move the needle. We have a class of freshmen from last year that we really believe is good and really going to be impactful. But I think what we found from last year with our circumstance, with not having fall practice, that obviously the biggest challenge for that class was they didn't pitch their senior year in high school, and then we throw them into Division I baseball and we say, here you go. And Drew Dowd, who pitched opening weekend, was one of the four weekend starters for us, and Joey Dixon was an opening weekend starter for us, and that was just a lot. It was just a lot to carry. And so Drew Dowd and Joey Dixon and Tommy O'Rourke and Brant Panser and Ryan Bruno are names that were sprinkled last year and helped us at different times. I guess my party line that I always say is I'm not expecting him to be improved this year. I'm expecting him to be unrecognizably improved this year.
That's great.
Oh my God, those guys were on your team last year.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure to put on, but I think they're capable of it. We really think that they are. That is a special pitching class that just, you know, because of circumstance, it was, you know, and then being a freshman just in general, I told you of how many guys that just weren't able to be impact freshmen, that we put a lot on them a year ago. And I'm just looking at 365 days that they're going to be able to find their way and get their feet on the ground and be able to help us, you know, just more consistently. But I think we're going to have some other pitchers on the staff. And again, like I said, the Alex Williams and Quinn Matthews that are going to be able to give them, allow them to pitch in the spot on our rotation that they have, that they need to. And then we're going to have a couple freshmen come in this year with big arms, you know, Braden Montgomery and Ty Uber are two names, but there's not going to be a whole lot of weight on them. I think they're going to be allowed to kind of just blend in, but it's going to be about the pitching. You know, I think that's going to be the needle mover for us this year. If we're going to look to kind of take the baton and make another run at this thing, it's going to be some of those names are going to be unrecognizably improved from a year ago, and you're going to go, oh my God, those guys were on the team and now that guy's pitching on a weekend. Or, you know, I always say half jokingly, I hope somebody moves Alex Williams to a Saturday or Sunday starter, because that means we're really good.
Nice.
I guess from your standpoint, you're the chairman of college baseball for a year. What are three things that you would change? And it can't be scholarships. Outside of scholarships, what would it be?
I'd get that third assistant paid first and foremost. Sure. That would be my number one. I think I would get replay to be everywhere, you know, not just optional or whether you can afford it. I'd have it be mandatory for everybody, because I think we want to get the calls right everywhere in the country. God, what would be the last one? I guess one of my hopes is we'd break that string of 8 consecutive road super regionals for the state.
I think the chairman can make that happen.
Yeah, I think, can I make one mandatory? Can you
legislate that.
No, we just have to cooperate and get there.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. I gotta ask you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go, Fitzy, and then SD wraps us up. Yep.
Thinking over your long career as a head coach, give me a couple of guys that you're facing that just terrify you. You know, there's got to be some of.
Well, the best player.
Did I freeze?
I remember the best player. That I'd ever coached against was Rendon when he was at Rice. It was everything. I mean, first of all, a guy that could hit like that, but then defensively, he was, you know, had a great arm at third and could move. I remember walking away from that and thinking, Anthony Rendon is the best college baseball player I've ever coached against, because he was just dynamite and just dynamic for sure. God, I'm trying to think. There's got to be somebody on. Well, you know what? There was a year when UCLA had that pitching staff of Cole and Bauer. And the crazy thing is, you know, as good as those two guys were, that Sunday guy Rasmussen might have been the best of us. You know, hey, every now and then you could get a hit off of Cole, and you know, Bauer could walk you, but he'd strike his way out of the inning. And then you'd get to Sunday and Rasmussen didn't give up any hits and he didn't walk anybody.
Right.
You know, so I remember that year being a big challenge. I think we did win a game or so in that weekend. I thought that was a pretty big accomplishment.
I'm kind of curious, from a coach's point of view, who's like the best manager that you've seen in terms of just the way he handles pitching, hitting, substitutions, things like that? Like, who's the one coach in college baseball you're like, man, he's really, really good at his job in terms of in-game management?
Well, hey, I always used to say, and I still believe it, you know, obviously I have great respect. Andy Lopez was just a dynamite coach that I had a huge respect for. You know, I feel so blessed and just humbled to have coached in the conference. You know, there was times where I would go to home plate against Texas and I'd be exchanging lineups with Augie Garrido. I'm like, come on, are you kidding me? I'm here with Augie Garrido at home plate. Or, you know, Wayne Graham, when you see his lineup card and he's got that calligraphy writing that he would there. You know, there's just some of those moments with some of those coaches that I'm thinking, God, this walk-on shortstop from Salinas is at home plate, you know, head on with some of these coaches, or George Horton, you know, the years at, and I remember when I was an assistant at Pepperdine, I used to go watch Fullerton play. They used to play Wednesday nights. I'd go every Wednesday night just so I could watch how Coach Horton would manage the game. And, but you know, just in our league, just matching up with some of the names. And I think when, you know, when I got into the league, Gary Adams was coaching at UCLA, and you know, Pat Murphy at Arizona State, and just up and down the conference, where, you know, it was just humbling for me to be part of that group. But the one coach, and I always just say this out of respect, as good as you thought Pat Casey was, I thought he was better. I am like, he's underrated, as good as you could think he is, because I thought he did such a great job, and he made, you know, Corvallis, Oregon, a destination spot for college baseball players, and created that atmosphere there with those fans that make it, you know, a challenge to go out there and play. So yeah, I always felt like, you know, Pat Casey, as good as you could think he is with three national titles, he's better than advertised.
Yeah, it's interesting. I went up there to cover a regional a few years ago, and I remember to take pictures, you had to sit on top of their dugout because they didn't have, like, a photo well. So I sat on top of Oregon State's dugout, and literally the entire game for nine innings, he was pacing back and forth, just nonstop coaching guys. And that's always kind of stood out to me about Pat.
Yeah. No, Pat Casey was great. And I would probably exclude my bias, because to me, Coach Marquis is the greatest of all time, and someone who has marked my life in so many different ways, but somebody to coach against for sure, you know. And again, God, you know, just my experience in coaching, you know, coaching college baseball, and getting a chance to match up with some of these guys, and some of these young ones that are coming up now. Shoot, Ben Orloff at Irvine, right? I mean, just some of these coaches. Our league is really new. I think Coach Savage and myself are the old men in the group right now. And shoot, when Coach Savage and I got in, we're the youngest guys in the league, right? So it's kind of crazy.
Eske, tell me if you'd agree with this, to follow up on that, and then you can ask your final question. So, you know, getting to coach against Mike Gillespie, Skip Gillespie, he was, to me, this is where my brain finally got to, is Skip was so advanced and so unpredictable that it actually stopped bothering you, because you just realized, like, I he's like 78 steps ahead of me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, I'm not even worried about it. Like, he's going to do something once or twice a weekend that you're just going to be on your heels and just get over it. Like, it's just, well, you know, was crazy.
I'll tell you what, when I would win games or a series against Coastal, I really felt a sense of accomplishment. Like, I mean,
yes,
the things that would come up, I mean, you had to be ready for the two-strike squeeze, or the two-strike steal a home, or the squeeze. Or one of my assistants said, you know, every now and then you'd see Coach Gillespie and he'd do these one, just real subtle moves, he'd touch, and then all hell would break loose on the field. And you're like, how did they get that fake slash and suicide squeeze from just those simple touches, right? I mean, they were picking your pitches, and you just had to be aware of so many facets of the game, that the sense of accomplishment when you beat a Mike Gillespie team was, I mean, you walked home, felt like you really had done something.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a guy that stole a home against USC his first year back against his son-in-law.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. How about that?
Yeah, they're up right, like 9-1 and he stole home.
That's, man, so good.
Some, you know, again, and Coach Gillespie was always so good to me. He really was. And I got to be, when I was an assistant coach at Pepperdine, Frank Sanchez was the head coach at Pepperdine, who was Mike's pitching coach. And I lived with Coach Gillespie's brother for my first like 8 or 9 months that I was living down in Southern California. And so I'd always had a special bond with that Gillespie family. And God, he's just, you know, like one of the best arguer in the history of college baseball. I would just love to hear his arguments. He would just wait for the umpire to say one word to slip, and all the umpire would have to say something like, "Mike, I'm sure they did." "Oh, you're sure?" word, and he would go off for the next, you know, 5 minutes based on one word that the umpire would say. I would argue we're in the history of college baseball.
Yeah, it was like a cross examination on the umpire. Oh, it was so good. Yeah.
So intelligent, right? He was so intelligent. And, you know, I loved hearing, you know, Dan Hubbs, who was my pitching coach for years at Cal, played for Coach Gillespie. He was an All-American reliever for Coach Gillespie. Just loved hearing all his stories.
That's awesome. All right, Eske, wrap us up. One final question.
All right, Kendall. Let me see what question I got for Kendall here. Let me think. Kendall's from Texas, right?
I've got a bad memory, so don't ask me about the individual performances.
A&M grad.
Well, let me think. Let me see. Best stadium. You give me your best stadium to go watch a college baseball game.
Ooh.
So I'll say this. So I have regular season and postseason. Postseason for me is Alex Box. Just anytime you go in that place for a postseason game, to me, Eske, it just feels like you're going in like a boxing match. Yeah. You know, you watch those guys go in the arena, MGM or whatever, Caesars Palace in Vegas. That's what it feels like when you walk in the box for like a super regional game. And so really one of my most memorable series is a couple of years ago when Florida State won in Mike Martin's last year. And it was a weird feeling, like it was intense, but everybody kind of felt like Florida State had the kind of that magical feeling about them. But for me, in the postseason, there's nothing better than the box. I haven't even been there yet. I don't know how. I was supposed to go there the first weekend before, right when COVID shut everything down. But, I mean, I haven't been there yet. But without going there, I can tell you Duty Noble has got to be the best. I mean, it just looks incredible in every single way. You saw it up close and personal with the Magnamy home run and all that. But that would be the one for me in the regular season. In terms of ballparks I've actually been to, I love going to Ole Miss. You know, I love going all across the South, really. I mean, any of those ballparks like that are terrific.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a great experience going to play at Mississippi State. And God, who knows if that Dashbuck fly ball to center field to lead off the game with the bases loaded. If that one creeps over Magnum's hand, who knows, right? I mean, it's early on, but they played great. And I remember my wife, her one, she had a comment. She said, "I've never been in line to go to a baseball game behind someone who had a bag of charcoal."
It's so great.
How much food did you eat from fans when you're at that super regional?
Oh, they were great to our guys, and our guys, you know, they loved it. And I did tell them, you know, as intense as it was, I wanted them to enjoy the experience, and hey, I was okay with them interacting with the fans. I didn't want them to play this, you know, this routine that we, you know, were us versus you. So I wanted them to enjoy, because I knew that those fans were gonna interact. I knew they were tough, and they're maybe gonna, you know, try to get on them a little bit, but they were gonna give them a plate of food by the end of the day. And I think some of our guys took a couple pictures with those fans, and the people at Omaha awesome. were the same way. They were great to our players. And I'll tell you one quick story is Brock Jones in one of the games. He kind of coasted to a ball, and a ball got right by him. And then at the end of the game, we ended up winning. It was against Arizona. And at the end of the game, you saw on Instagram, there was a picture of that he took behind with the fans. And one of my coaches had the greatest lines. And they said, "Well, hey, how'd you get that picture?" He said, "Well, the guy threw down his phone to me." He goes, "That's the only thing you caught all day," right?
Oh, that's great. He had the mustache going. It's so awesome. So
yeah, he's electric in Omaha.
That's great.
So, yeah, our guys, you know, I love when guys do that. You know, when they decide to do something as a team. In 2011, our guys, they bleached their hair. Right. So I had the whole team had bleached hair. But when they rally that way to do something as a group, I'm in. I'm all in.
That's awesome.
And so our guys decided they were going to go mustaches. And I think at the end of the someone made a comment that the Stanford Cardinal were, you know, mustache and muscles, I guess, because we hit some home
runs. That's right.
They had a T-shirt made of a mustache on there.
So great. Awesome. Hey, Eski, thanks for doing this, man. This was so awesome. Fun. Yeah. Good luck this fall. We'll look forward to catching up with you after the fall. But yeah, thanks again. This was just tremendous.
I appreciate what you guys do. And Runes, you know, you were adopted by the Stanford Cardinal last year. You picked us so many times. Our guys, they made a point. There was a Rooney chant, I think, after every point of the season. From the selection show where they wanted to have a shout-out to Rooney. After he won the regional, there was a Rooney shout-out. After the super regional, there was a Rooney shout-out. So you were with us.
Yeah.
So do we have picture proof that Runes is on the big board in the locker room?
I got video of almost every one of those shout-outs because it was during the selection show, because I think there was one weekend. Was it the Oregon weekend? I think it was.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah.
Then it was like 9-1. Everyone picked Oregon except us. And so we won that weekend. And after that weekend, it was all on that you were the guy.
Yeah, I think I told Aaron and Kendall this story, but I remember Sunday night after you guys went up to Oregon and you know, truth be told, I obviously loved your guys' team, but the real reason I picked Stanford was because I was so far behind in our picks that I had to be contrarian. I was dying on the vine here. So I pick you guys, you go up there and win. And I'll never forget, it was like Sunday at like 5:30 at night, and Thomas Eager calls me and I'm like, oh my gosh, that is bizarre. Why is Thomas Eager calling me at 5:30 on a game weekend on a Sunday night? And he says, hey, real quick, because you guys were at the airport. He goes, hey, can one of my pitchers text you? And I'm like, sure. Yeah. Why would one of your pitchers text me? And he goes, and it was Brendan Beck. And Brendan Beck sent me the coolest text. And he had his screenshot, because you guys know that our social media guys do that really cool Instagram picture of the nine people making the picks. And it was 8 Oregon logos and 1 Stanford logo under my name. And so Brendan Beck sent me a screenshot of that and said, stay with us. It was really cool. Super short. And it was awesome. Gotta love it.
They loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. Hey, again, Eski, really appreciate this. Hey, for our listeners, we always appreciate listening. Hey, we need to get back on the rate and reviews on iTunes. And so here's what I want you to do. We will start reading one from now on. In your rate and review, besides complimenting myself and my hair, I want you to put your high school and your high school mascot so we can get a high school. So, for instance, Malvern Prep Fighting Friars. Let's go.
Right.
Let's get that. Let's get that in the rate and reviews. So put your high school and your mascot. That'll spice it up. So, Eski, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it. That was super fun.
No work. All right,
yep,
guys.
Sounds good.
Good time.
Yep, sounds good. Hey,